Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 129. Are small game conventions dying out? So first of all, I want to thank all of you new and longtime listeners alike for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. As you could tell from the episode intro, this is the 129th episode of the show. And the question that I pose as the title for the episode is one that was raised by the media director for TotalCon. The other day online, Angela Parento kind of just waxed philosophical about it, and she pondered, quote, "With the strong and growing presence of megacons like Comic-Con and PAX, are game conventions on the same slow, lingering death march, like the dinosaur as future generations get used to bigger shows for less money, like how cheap Walmarts killed many smaller Main Street stores?" Unquote. So before we get into that, first of all, I want to let you all know that, of course, everything that I cover in this episode of Wargaming Recon can be found by visiting the show notes at wargamingforums.com/WR129. That's wargamingforums.com/WR129. So if you go there, you'll find all the stuff I talk about, and there'll be links and all that kind of good stuff. So let's get back into the episode. So my first knee-jerk reaction to what Angela posed was like, yeah, I think, you know, smaller cons are going to be going the way of the dodo. They're dying out. Why would they be able to last against these mega cons? You look at, for example, those smaller Main Street stores in the example that Angela gave, comparing smaller cons to the Walmarts of the larger cons. Walmart kills those smaller stores. I don't care how good those small Main Street stores are. They're just not able to do business in that kind of situation. So I thought, yeah, of course, the smaller con's gonna die, right? But then I thought about it some more, and I said, no, I don't think the smaller cons are gonna die, but, where the but means that something has to be done to stop the smaller cons from dying. So, to kind of put it in comparison, and I have to say, it's not a fair side-by-side comparison, really, but to kind of put it into perspective, you get a MegaCon like Gen Con, HistoriCon, something like that, PAX East, right? Those are all gigantic conventions, huge! And then you go to a smaller convention, something like Huzzah, or TotalCon, or Havoc, something really small like that, it's apples and oranges. You can't compare them because they're not like items. On the surface, they seem like it because they're both gaming conventions and all that sort of thing, but they're really not. And even comparing like a TotalCon and Huzzah, you can't because they are so different. The comparison just breaks down or doesn't work. Now that being said, let's just kind of dig into this a little bit. So if you look at the standard MegaCon, and this is just based off my experience and based off of what I've heard and read and learned about all of this, MegaCons have some important pros, right? If you would do a pro-con list, they have some important pros. First of all, they're huge. They're gigantic. Mammoth size is to their benefit. It allows them to do so many different things because of their size. And of course they can negotiate certain contracts that a smaller con couldn't. There's just a lot that goes into the benefits of a convention being gigantic, being so huge that they need one of the largest convention centers, one of the largest hotels with convention space in an entire major city to be able to host one of these things. Whereas, if they were smaller, they wouldn't be able to have that impact, right? So the second thing is that because they are so large, they of course have more space and everything, and therefore they are able to have a greater variety of content in their convention, whether it's games, types of games, exhibits, things for you to do, just ways to pass the time at these mega cons. They're so large, they get the space, right? And there's just so many different things to do that as a result of that, chances are there will be something for everybody, which you may not be able to say about a smaller convention. Number three, there will be more people who attend a mega con. Now, for someone like myself, that might be a negative, right? Because I don't want to be squished into some space with 5 million other people. I'm exaggerating, I know. However, this really has some value here because if there's a lot of different people, you have the chance to meet many different people. Maybe you might make some new friends. You'll be able to avoid people who you don't like, perhaps. You'll also be able to get exposed to a variety of new and interesting things and people and just stuff that people are excited about. You go to something like this and you're bound to see something that you may not have experienced before. And maybe someone who you just met at one of these, because there's so many different people, maybe you just click, and if it's a smaller con, you may not get that because, yeah, they can still have a lot of people at them. But the odds dwindle as the number of people attend, that with fewer people, you may not be able to find someone else who you're just going to click with and be like, hey, we're going to be best friends for the rest of our lives. And perhaps you're not looking for that, but that could be a benefit to this. Or maybe because there are more people at a MegaCon, you might have a question about something. One of those people might have the answer to it, whereas at a smaller con, they may not, right? Number four, the sheer size of these MegaCons attracts more attention from just about everyone, from businesses, from attendees, from the media. You hear coverage about people going to a Comic-Con, about people going to a Gen Con or a Sorcon or something. You don't hear about people going to a smaller con. And the more people who are hearing about this because of the attention, the more likely that different businesses and game designers and all that sort of stuff will go, more that someone will say, hey, I saw this on the radio, on the news, on the internet or whatever. We should check it out. The more that the media pays attention to it because of all this stuff happening, feeds on itself. And because of all this, it helps it to get more people, to therefore become more ginormous, to therefore get a greater variety of things. So it just builds up on itself. And finally, with just the size and all of this that goes into it that I'm talking about, the chances are that there will be an abundance of product launches and sneak peeks. You go to something, say like Gen Con, that's when all the major game companies are releasing what they have coming out. They might tease it online. They might say, hey, we got a cool thing coming up. And they might even tell you what the property's about. It's Terminator. It's whatever, you know? But you're not actually going to be able to see it. You're not going to get to hold it. You're not going to be able to interact with the game, with the product. Whereas those sneak peeks and the product launches and everything, you're more likely to get something like that at a mega con. Does that mean it does it happen at smaller cons? No, of course not. That's ridiculous. You can't say that. But it is more likely that you'll have more of this at a larger game convention. So let's move to the smaller cons, right? Smaller cons have pros too. They have negatives. Of course, everything has a negative. Everything has a pro in life. Let's talk about the pros. Let's talk about the good things about smaller cons. And I'm not trying to compare contrast these two. I just want to share the strengths of the mega cons and share the strengths of the smaller cons. So then you can see I'm not saying we need to kill all the mega cons and yay smaller cons or vice versa. Just to kind of say, here why people might want to attend these things and why they are good before just kind of moving on to some suggestions that I have to help smaller cons avoid going the way of the dodo, right? So let's talk about some of the positives associated with them. A smaller con needs to, and if it is successful, it will have a targeted audience. It will not try to be everything to everyone. You go to a mega con, and they will do that, right? You go to San Diego Comic Con, there's a gazillion different things, but if you go to a smaller con, they know who they are, who's going to come, and because of that, they are better able to serve that population. Something like Huzzah, right? It knows it is a tabletop miniatures historical wargaming convention. Do they do video games? Do they do board games? They know who they are, who's going to come, why they're there, and as such, they know what needs to be done to keep the people happy, to make sure that the people attending will have a good time. If you think about it, a convention is a party, right? If you were to go to a party, you want to have fun. You want to enjoy yourself. You don't want to go to a party where you're going to be miserable, because then you will never, ever want to go back to a party held or hosted by that person or people. So if you think of it that way, a convention that is able to make your party, able to make the convention a fun experience, will help you to come back, and will also help you to tell other people about the fun time you had, and maybe those other people will come. So it serves the convention to ensure you have a good time, which can definitely happen at a smaller con by having that targeted audience. And this kind of flows into the next point I have to make, which is that smaller cons are better able to utilize a personal touch. I've talked numerous times about my experiences at TotalCon and how it started off a little rocky, but then it became better and better and better and better. And actually the rockiness was great because it allowed me to reach out to TotalCon to hear from them with their personal touch and to interact with them. At a larger mega convention, if something like that were to happen, I would not be able to get that personal touch on them. I would be just another number, another face. It wouldn't mean anything. But at a smaller convention, I am Jonathan J. Reinhardt of Wargaming Recon. People know me. I get to know them. People may recognize my face. I will recognize someone else's face. And you're able to build up those relationships so that you can then have fun. Additionally, smaller conventions are focused. I talked about this a little bit with that targeted audience, but they are able to be focused on who they are, why they're there, and what they need to do. A megacon has no focus, or it's lost the focus. It's everything to everyone, and you're bound to fail, right? If you're trying to make everyone happy all the time, you cannot do that. But if you are able to be focused onto a specific niche, then you are more likely to succeed at that. And if you are focused, then the others are most likely to be focused. So if I was to go to TotalCon, let's say, I know that their focus is on board games and on role-playing games. There is other stuff that happens there and great other reasons to go. But if I'm a board gamer or a role player, I know that I need to go to TotalCon because they are focused on that and I am focused on that. Our interests intersect, right? They overlap. Our focuses are one and the same, which then goes back to that targeted audience, the personal touch, the fun party that I'm talking about. I get two more points as to why a small con, some pros of a small con. The next is that, in my experience, they tend to be more affordable. I've heard from people who want to attend a megacon like PAX East, where tickets sell out in a matter of minutes, and they're hundreds of dollars. And then, since they sell out so quickly, people who have bought them try to sell their tickets on the secondary market. And of course, it goes up and up and up and up. Who can afford to go to a convention where you're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars just to get in the door? I don't know about you, but that's not something I can afford to do all the time. Do I spend money when I go to a smaller con? Yeah. When I go to TotalCon, I stay at the hotel. The hotel costs money, right? It's not cheap for the hotel. But I don't need to stay at the hotel. I can just get into TotalCon. It's like $20, I think, to get into the con, plus some money for plane tickets and stuff. If I go to Havoc, I can get in the door for free, walk around, see if there's anything I like, and if there is, it's a nominal charge to play. The same thing with Huzzah. It's a nominal charge to get into the con to play. I sign up for all sorts of different games. And then if I choose to stay, it costs more to stay at the hotel. Or if I want to do some shopping with vendors, that's another thing, right? But to actually just get into the con, it has that low price point, which is fantastic because it allows more people to get in. The hurdle to jump for you to make it into that door is so low, you can practically just pick up a foot a little bit and shuffle forward. It's fantastic. You can't say that about a megacon. Megacon, you're like, whoa, it's way up high. Let me climb my ladder before I make my 40-foot high jump to get into the con. Which is ridiculous, right? So the affordability factor is very important, especially since nowadays, and in general always, but really nowadays, money is tight for a lot of people. I don't know about you, but I don't have a whole lot of extra disposable income just to get into an event where I may or may not end up playing, or maybe I just want to go and walk around and check out something, maybe play one or two games, spend a few hours. I can't be spending hundreds of dollars for that kind of stuff. It's like a whole ordeal. And then, I don't know about you, but for me, the stress level would go high. I'd be like, whoa, I spent all this money. I better have a good time. Because if I don't, then it's not worth my money since I spent all this money. I have to be down there all the time. And then you run into issues where people don't get enough sleep, they're not eating, and just all sorts of things. It's not worth it, folks. It's just not. Whereas that smaller con with the lower price point to get in, you don't have that. It's amazing and it's beautiful at the same time. And then finally, the last point is that smaller cons, in my experience, are more responsive to feedback. And I touched on this a little bit when I mentioned personal touch. My first time at TotalCon was a little rocky. It wasn't bad, and I'm not trying to knock it, but I was able to get in touch. I left some feedback with the powers that be, and wouldn't you know, they responded quickly. They heard what I had to say. They helped me. It was great. Try doing that at HistoriCon. You're not going to get anywhere. Try doing it at PAX. Try doing it at Gen Con. Try doing it at Comic-Con. It won't happen. You will be just another piece of white noise that gets ignored. You know how annoyed you get when, say, something goes wrong with a utility bill, something's wrong with your cable or your telephone system, and you try calling up one of the big companies, dial 4 for this, press 7 for that. No matter how many times you press 0 for that operator, you never get a human person. You just get bounced around left and right, and they don't really care what's going on. That's how it feels for me at a larger mega game convention. The smaller cons, it's not like that. It is like hanging out with your best friend where you say, hey, you know, I was thinking about this. And they're like, yeah, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate your feedback. And then they act on it if appropriate. So you know someone heard you. You know that someone acknowledged what you had to say and acknowledged that there might very well be value there. And if there is value and if it is appropriate for the convention to make a change or to utilize your information, they do it. Mega cons do not. Simple as that. So now that I've listed pros for each of the mega cons and the smaller cons, let's talk about some of the things that smaller cons, in my opinion, need to do in order to avoid becoming a dinosaur, right? We don't want them to die out because there are different types of gamers, different types of conventions, different types of games, and all of this fits so that hopefully each type of gamer has something that they can go to, a party, a convention that they can attend, and have a good time. Just because a MegaCon may not be for me, doesn't mean it can't be for you. And consequently, just because a smaller con is for me, doesn't mean it can't be for you. So in my opinion, smaller cons need to do 5 things in order to not only just continue their existence, but to flourish. Some of the items that I'm going to mention are being done by some of the smaller cons that I have previously mentioned. My inclusion to this is not trying to say that the cons I mentioned are not doing this. So I just want to put that little caveat out there. It's important to remember these are just my beliefs on this, some things that I think could help smaller cons around to help them to continue on. Is this tried and true? No, I have not put this into effect. I don't run a convention. But it's something that I think just makes sense. So number 1 is they need to adapt. The times, they are changing, right? As the song goes. And if you are not adapting with that change, you will be the dinosaur. It's simple as that. How you adapt is hard. And I can't tell you how to adapt or how the con should adapt because each of the smaller cons, they're different and their circumstances are different. Telling one smaller con to adapt in this way won't work for another smaller con. But the fact is they need to adapt. They need to be open to adapt. They need to be willing to adapt and to do what is necessary to stay relevant. Number 2, and this is going to sound kind of opposite from number 1, but number 2 is that the smaller cons need to stay true to their core beliefs. They need to stay true to who they are. So no matter how much you adapt, you can't lose yourself. You can't try to be someone who you are not. You need to know that you are Con XYZ, and Con XYZ does this really well. And because of that, you need to make sure that this that you do really well continues on. You can adapt it, you can modify it, but as long as you keep that, and as long as it stays relevant to who you are, and to the people who attend your con, then that has to stay. If you don't know who you are nobody, right? You are nothing. So you have to know who you are, and you have to be able to carry that forward and have the strength and power to do so. Number 3, smaller cons need to reach out to non-traditional attendees. And again, this sounds weird. It sounds like I'm just giving a bunch of contrary statements here. Okay. yes, you need to stay true to your core beliefs for the smaller quantities to survive, right? But on top of that, you can do so and yet adapt to reach out to these non-traditional attendees. I go to TotalCon. I have played role-playing games. I play board games. I don't consider myself a role player. I don't consider myself a board gamer. I consider myself a war gamer. Am I their traditional attendee? No, I am not, because my primary goal going there is not to play the board games or play role-playing games. My primary goal has become to run events there, to attend the panels that they do, to hang out with people, to network. That has allowed me to go, and as such, I kind of do, in an unofficial capacity, some of their reaching out to non-traditional attendees. You war gamers are probably not the traditional attendee for TotalCon. And yet, I talk about TotalCon a lot here on Wargaming Recon. Why? Because I think it makes sense. It's just what I do. And there are many other smaller cons throughout the world, and exhibitions and trade shows or whatever. I know in Europe and in the UK, convention as we know it here in America, it's not quite the same thing. There may not always be participation games and that sort of thing. But I think this still kind of holds true for that. Number four, they need to utilize technology. You don't want to get eaten up by it. You don't want to get lost in the wilderness of tech. But you do want to use it for your benefit. And that can be having a responsive website that people can access on their mobile devices. It can be using social media for gathering feedback, for reaching out to those non-traditional attendees. It can be using video chats to have the con staff stay up to date with one another. It can be just medley of ways of using tech. There's so many different ways. I can't explain them all. I can't state them all. But it's important to make sure that you smartly use technology. Number five, and this is a final one. Smaller cons need to be bold so that they can try something different. Will it always work? No. And if you do it smartly, it won't kill the convention. But you need to try it. If you're a historical gaming convention, maybe it makes sense to be bold and do more than just have games. Maybe it makes sense to be bold and have seminars or panels. Branch out. I'm not saying move away from who you are, because that just doesn't necessarily make sense. But if all you've ever done is one particular thing, expand your horizons. Try something different. Don't do it big. Do that test case. Just see how it works. And then if it does work, you're golden. And if not, you didn't do it in a way that it will cripple you. But if you never try new things, you're never going to adapt. And then you will probably be that dinosaur. You'll become the dodo. You will be D-E-A-D. Dead. So those are just some of my thoughts on what smaller cons, rather, can and should do to stay relevant. I don't believe that smaller game conventions are dying out. I just don't. Not at this point, anyway. But I think that, like anything in life, if they're not moving, they're staying still, and once you stay still, you're gone. And that holds true for game conventions, and holds true for game designers, it holds true for gamers and podcasters and all sorts of people. Just holds true in general. I think this also kind of ties in, and this is a topic for another day, for another podcast episode, but I think it kind of ties in with the graying of the hobby. And I know there's a debate here as to whether or not the hobby is graying and what, if anything, that might mean. But I think it does tie into that, because let's say, for argument's sake, that the hobby is graying, that we are dying out, and that there are not younger people replacing wargamers who meet their maker, right? That ties into the conventions, because if conventions are filled with the grayed wargamer, and they're not getting those younger folks coming in to play the games, what happens then? Eventually, there will be no one attending the convention, and then it dies. But I think if they adapt, and if they do the things that I mentioned, my five ideas, I think you can entice those non-traditional attendees, and just through word of mouth and an organic kind of explosion of reach, really, to other people, that the conventions can continue on for as long as they want to. I want to talk about another convention. It's a small convention, and it's doing something really interesting to me. I was trying to figure out how I was going to talk about it, and I thought maybe I would just kind of slide it in as a mention, saying, hey, I'm going to be at this thing. But then when I decided to do this episode as a topic, because what Angela said, I was like, hey, this is perfect. It fits right in. it is an example of how a smaller con is adapting. It's reaching out to non-traditional attendees. It's utilizing technology and it's being bold. 4 out of my 5. And I'm sure it is also staying true to its core belief. I'm talking about a brand new convention that is new to my area. It's called TaskCon 2015. It is a convention that is being crowdfunded. So listener Adam of the Fencing Frog blog posted on the War Gaming Recon Facebook to say that there was a new gaming con coming near him and I in Massachusetts, and he thought I might be interested to hear about it. He gave me a link. I checked it out, and it's very interesting. So TaskCon is being funded through Kickstarter. I think this is an innovative way to launch a convention. And I should say, they call it a convention, I'm calling it a convention, but really, it is a one-day game day kind of thing, but like on a grand scale. It is being held on Saturday, March 21st, 2015, from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the Courtyard Marriott Hotel in Milford, Massachusetts. It's being held in conjunction with the Metro West Board Gaming Meetup Group. And like I said, that's 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., so that's a really long day of gaming. It's a game day, but on a grand scale. So it's a very, very, very small convention. The only way that you can get tickets to this is to back the Kickstarter. I have a link in the show notes, wargamingforums.com/TaskCon2015. The Kickstarter ends on February 26, 2015, and there are other pledge levels that I'm not going to talk about because they are filled. There are some that are not filled that you can still get into. So if you back it at $1, you don't get a ticket. It just kind of supports the con and helps it to do extra things, but it doesn't allow you to attend. If you back it at $15 or more, then you get a ticket. So $15 gets you in the door, play as many games as you want from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. If you spend $26 or more to back it, you get what's called a couples pack. So you get 2 tickets and a pack of Mentos. Mentos is just kind of a fun thing. The project creator likes Mentos and thinks it's kind of cool. So he's throwing them in for a couples pack. No, you don't actually have to be a couple. You can be just 2 buddies going, play games. It's cheaper that way, right? Because if you do 26 or more, that means tickets at 13 apiece as opposed to 15. Not a bad deal. Now, the Kickstarter posting has all sorts of other cool information about it, and I suggest you check it out because if they reach a certain stretch goal, then the convention organizer is going to buy some non-alcoholic beverages and soda, that sort of stuff for people to drink. Otherwise, you're going to buy your own stuff, bring it, and then there are things to eat for breakfast and lunch at the hotel, but no lunch at all. I should mention that, as far as I can tell, the convention is focused on board games. Of course, it's grown out of a meetup group, a board gaming meetup group. But there will be attendees there, I'm told, who play 40K, Flames of War, Infinity, and X-Wing miniatures. Anyone who backs it, and I think even if you don't back it, but if you just want to give a suggestion, but anyone who backs it can contact the organizers and suggest some other games that they might like to see played. If you happen to have an expertise in a game and you want to run an event, I bet if you are backing it and going to the con and saying, hey, I'm really good at whatever game, I'd like to run it, that they would let you do it at this space. I can tell you that the convention is fully funded. And I say this because one of the problems with crowdfunding is that sometimes they are not funded. People get all excited. Ooh, this is going to happen. I can't wait. And then it doesn't happen, right? This is fully funded. It's going to happen. I can also tell you that I am going to be there because I was given a great free press badge for me to go and check it out. So I'm looking forward to taking a peek at TaskCon 2015. If you happen to go, please say hi to me. And I'm sure you'll see me floating around at some point. But I mention all of this, not just because to be like, hey, go and do this or whatever, but because I think this is a really innovative way for a smaller con to start up and to continue. If you can do this, there's further hope that smaller cons won't die out. Just something to keep in mind. Now, at this point, I want to just also mention that there's a couple New England conventions coming up. TotalCon is February 19th to the 22nd at Holiday Inn in Mansfield, Massachusetts. The Wargaming Recon podcast is a sponsor, and I'm planning to pop in for a few hours Saturday afternoon. If you happen to see me, say hi. I might have my wife and the new addition to our family there, but more on that in a moment. And then Havoc Game Convention is March 27th to the 29th. At Mayronis Park in Shrewsbury, Mass. I'll have a link in the show notes to that as well. And then some announcements for you. First of all, I want to let everyone know once more that 127games.com has renewed their sponsorship for the 2015 podcast year. I got to say, without their help, it would not be possible to do the show. Just not their financial-wise. They make a huge difference. So if you have any need of products that they happen to be selling, please check them out. There's a link in the show notes that you can go to, or just go to 12-7-games.com, and that'll get you all set up. And then the biggest announcement is that I am delighted to say, after much talk, that this was going to be happening. My wife gave birth to our daughter, Catherine Ann. She was born on February 4th, 2015 at 2:19 in the morning. 7 pounds, 8 ounces, 20 inches long. It was a very, very long delivery. 72 hours in labor, I think she was. So I had shared this on the Wargaming Recon social media, and I know that many of you sent congratulations and just lots of messages of support and happiness. So I am so appreciative to you, all of you, for that. Just, it means a lot. I have to let you know that since I did share this on social media and shared it before the podcast, I use social media for that sort of stuff in general. So you might want to be sure to follow me on Twitter and check out what's going on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. Use Facebook more than Twitter, but both are useful. It's worth your time to just take a peek from time to time. And there are some photos of the baby in the show notes, so you may want to check those out. After tell you, I'm doing my hardest not to be one of those just obnoxious parents who's like, here's a photo of my kid. Oh, and here's another photo of my kid. And did you see this yet another photo of my kid? Try not to do that, but it's hard. It's really hard. And of course, now that the baby's here, I'm taking a brief break of new content for all of you. This is a new episode mainly because I did a recast last week and I was like, I got the time. I can do a new episode. It was timely with what was going on, so I wanted to make sure I got this out. But there'll be a little bit of a hiatus moving forward, just where there might be some recast episodes coming out for your listening pleasure, some of those classic episodes from The Vault. So I wanted to let you know about all of that. And then, of course, talking about sponsorship and funding and crowdsource funding and all that sort of stuff, I need to talk about Patreon. So if you are not a supporter of Wargaming Recon on Patreon, I hope that you will consider it. We do have a backer, and you too can support us for as little as $1 an episode, which is roughly $2 a month. That's $2 American, less than a cup of coffee, really, when you think about it. Wargamingforums.com/Patreon. That will be in the show notes, so don't worry. All the information is on there as to why you may want to support us on Patreon. But generally, if you like the show, if you feel that there's been some value for you, if you have gotten any sort of enjoyment out of it, think of Patreon as a tip jar, just saying, you know, I really appreciate what's happened at Wargaming Recon. Let me back it for $1 an episode. It's $2 a month. That's nothing, right? Just to show my appreciation for the value received from the podcast. Think of it that way. We've had some reviews that I'd like to share with everyone. So the first one is an iTunes review. If you happen to like the show, you can, of course, leave a review on iTunes, wargamingforums.com/iTunes. Don't worry, in the show notes. So Jamie from Norway left a 5-star review titled, quote, "A Great Wargames Podcast." His review says, quote, "I'm really enjoying this show. I've listened to about 50 episodes now and found all of them to have real value. The range of topics is refreshing, and the quality of production and guests really makes it a good listen. Wargaming Recon is mostly focused on historical miniatures wargames, but enough different games and tangential topics are covered that it's always interesting," unquote. So Jamie, thank you for the review. Thank you for the very kind 5 stars and for the fantastic review. I appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy life to leave that review. It means a lot. And then I also have another review that I'd like to share. This time it's from Stitcher Radio. For the longest time, I wasn't aware that Stitcher allowed people to leave reviews. I think it's a newer thing, and this is our very first review on Stitcher. So Robert D. left a 4-star review on Stitcher titled "Historical Wargaming," and his review says, quote, "Every episode has some great content related to wargaming in New England. It could be talking about a convention with one of the directors, holiday buying guides, or even just doing a mailbag episode," unquote. So thank you, Robert D., for your review on Stitcher. I really appreciate it. You are our first review on Stitcher, so yay. And if you happen to listen to the show via Stitcher, you can leave a review there. I'll have a link in the show notes for you to use. It's wargamingforums.com/StitcherRadio. That'll bring you to our listing there, and at the bottom, you can just leave a review, however many stars, whatever you want to say. So thank you to everyone who has left reviews now and in the past for the show. They mean a lot, and they make a huge difference. Just think of it this way. If you're searching for a podcast, and you see one that has just a few reviews, or no reviews, and you see another with bunches of reviews, and they're like good reviews, and you see people have insightful things to say, which one are you going to listen to? I don't know about you, but I'd listen to the one with the reviews, and just the ones that I could see what everyone had to say. So that's something to keep in mind, because if you leave reviews, and buddies leave reviews, and someone else leaves reviews, someone new can find the podcast and listen. They'll say, hey, Wargaming Recon, what is this? And they'll look. They think, that's pretty decent. I'm going to give that a try. And by doing this, you can help grow the hobby. Well, it is that time where we get near the end. I want to remind all of you that you can stay up to date with what is planned for future episodes by visiting our episode guide. It has upcoming show topics and release dates, all that sort of good stuff. Again, link in the show notes. Don't you worry. You can stay up to date with us by interacting on Facebook, by sending me emails to jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. That's a brand new email address, jonathan@wargamingrecon.com, jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. Also on Twitter, and if you want to get these show notes, and I would recommend it because I've mentioned a bunch of links, but if you want to get these show notes for the links or for the pictures of my baby daughter, Catherine Ann, head on over to wargamingforums.com/WR129. wargamingforums.com/WR129. That has all the information I've talked about in this episode, links to everything, and just all that sort of good stuff. Next time, there'll be another episode of Wargaming Recon. I believe it will be my coverage of Total Con. I'm going to try to squeeze in an appearance there and do a little bit of coverage to put into an episode. So it'll either be that or it'll be a recast. We'll see how it goes. I'm trying to get back into the new episodes. So I know that is in the pipe. And then I'm also working on scheduling guests and talking about other conventions down the road and just all sorts of other cool things. So please just keep on checking back and seeing what's going on with that. And then you know the deal. No matter how busy you are in life, no matter how many diapers you gotta change or how many feedings for those newborns, no matter how many hours you work at your job, just no matter what, you need to keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com.